listening to The Unlabeling Effect. We gather here every other week to explore all things mental health. Let us be part of your support system to inspire and motivate you to take care of your well-being. We, Vivian, Risha, and myself, Melody, welcome you to our UE community.
We are so excited to have Zoe Pena with us today. She is the youngest and first Filipino president of the American Women's Association of Hong Kong, an organization that has been going strong for 67 years and is dedicated to giving back to the community and creating spaces for women from all walks of life. AWA has paved the way for other charitable women-focused organizations to flourish. Apart from her day job, Zoe serves on the fundraising committee of Enrich HK, a nonprofit that empowers domestic helpers through workshops on financial literacy. Zoe shares her home in Hong Kong with her husband Victor and their two lovely rescue dogs, Bogart and Georgia. She's actively involved in supporting animal welfare organizations, including Hong Kong Dog Rescue, Lifelong Animal Protection Charity, Kirsten's Zoo, Paw's Guardian Rescue Shelter, and more. I'm your host, Vivian, and with me today are Zoe, Mel, and Rita.
So Zoe and I actually met at one of the events at American Chambers of Hong Kong. I think it was about women's mental health. And I was so captivated by her presence. I think like when Zoe talks, like she just naturally like gather all the attention in the room. And then I remembered when the event ended, I just like went straight to her. I was like, I'm so fascinated by your story. And then we actually sat down and then she was telling me about her background and stuff like that. Zoe, we're so happy that you're doing this with Unlabeling Effect. So let's start with a short intro of what you do and let the audience know a little bit more about you.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm so happy to be here. I remember that meeting, Vivian, and it was just so quick, our chat. And I'm so glad we stayed in touch over the holidays. It's been a busy one, and I'm glad to be here meeting everyone and chatting with everyone. A little intro about me. Originally from Manila, you know, I've been in Hong Kong for over 10 years now. I didn't even walk in my graduation when I moved to Hong Kong, because I got offered the job very quickly and I told my parents, like, peace out. I started my career in art. I used to sell art. I used to run a gallery. I used to run my own gallery. I used to work for an auction house and all of that. That was probably 10, 11 years of my professional life. It really paved the way for me to move into different areas of where I am now around marketing and communications. Other than that, what keeps me busy in Hong Kong really is, you know, the AWA. Yes, definitely. Which is another story on how I kind of stumbled into it. And hanging out with my dogs. I love to cook. That's one of my ways to promote my own culture, is through food as well. In the past probably 5-6 years, it's been a journey of trying new things and pushing the boundaries of what I think I should be doing with my life, which is exciting. Where you're seeing me at and how we met, you know, the American Chamber of Commerce talking about women's health, that's nothing that I would have ever, you know, foreseen for me ever. It's not something I'm really that comfortable with either. I like having great chats with girlfriends. That's what I love to do. And so I'm very happy to be here because this feels like it.
I'm so glad that when you do your self-introduction, you didn't just talk about your achievements. You're like, I like to cook. I play with my dogs. It's something that we don't do often. When people ask you like, oh, who you are or what do you do, like we immediately associate with our career. And I do think with you wearing multiple hats, it's an outcome of your constant like self-identification process, kind of. And I'm really interested to know like how it all started, but what made you want to move away and come to Hong Kong to start a new life?
You know, when you go through life and you're trying to figure out your identity, geography doesn't matter. It's more of like, what is quickest, first and foremost? I did a double major in creative writing. I was a poetry major and an art management major. You know, this is the testament to my parents saying that, you know, when your kid comes to you and says they want to be a poet, like that's panic. Like you, now that I'm 35 and you look back and you have your 17, 16 year old going like, I'm going to be a poet. I'm going to be a writer. And they're like, okay, if this is going to make you happy, study creative writing. And they did in their own way to say, okay, you love uni sushi. You love really good sushi. When you go into the world, you're going to have to learn how to pay for this for yourself. You know, and I was just like, oh, okay. And so that's why I took on the second degree, which is art management. In my head, that was the closest thing to trying to make money within the creative sphere. Okay. That I didn't feel like I was selling my, you know, my artistic soul or whatever. That second degree really opened up opportunities for me to see the world through art, you know, because art management was really about museum work, gallery work, managing artists, managing, learning how to hold an artwork, collections management, and all of that. And I love it. It is like the stuff that it's still my dream career. And I love it so much that I decided not to do it.
But Zoe, like after 10 to 11 years of being in the art world, what was the actual trigger point for you that you said, okay, look, I really need a change, because you love that so much? But then what was the trigger?
I was really bored, to be honest, at the end, because in my bucket list, in my plan, I said, I'm going to run a gallery. I'm going to own my own art business. I'm going to work in an auction house. I'm going to manage my artists. I'm going to source artwork for some of the biggest hotels in the world. And I came to a point where I'm like, oh, I'm there at the end of my list. I was so young and I had bulldozed my way through this list for some reason, passion fueled. And at the end of it, I felt incredibly tired. I was broke. When you run your business, you have to look for your next payday, right? And there's no one's going to give you a salary. And for me, that was part of the excitement about it, is that you catch the big fish. I had started to feel like a caricature of myself. Art and like my social life were so entrenched together. And it was also kind of debilitating to be seen as the art girl all the time, the Filipino art girl. The trigger point for me was when I would walk into another opening or another party and we do the networking and people ask, oh, what do you do? And you'd have to do this whole spiel all over again. And I just felt gross. You know, I just felt
really,
yeah, you can see people's eyes glaze over. You know, your eyes are glazing over when you hear them say that back. It's not authentic. That was number one. I was in an auction, and auctions are super exciting. You're surrounded by these beautiful things, very glamorous. It's one of those things where, you know, people applaud in auctions when things sell really well. I felt a sense of like, wow, look at this amazing space I'm in. Look at what I work at. Look, I've helped put all of this together and the team is great. And then I had a moment where, just thinking back when you were 16, you dreamt of this life, you know, and now you're here. And then I did think back to when I was 16, I was like, I don't know if I dreamt about watching people applaud how much an artwork goes for. I dreamt about a world, a beautiful world with art, working with art, but it was a realization for me that this is part of it. It's not a bad thing because it is amazing stuff. I had moved away from what that 16-year-old me wanted to be and wanted to do. You know, you had one definition of what you wanted to be, and yeah, you did it. But there's a whole world that came with it, and maybe it wasn't part of what you wanted. Mm-hmm. I think it was the hyper commercialization of something beautiful. Money is currency. Money is value. It is our way of moving through the world. But I wasn't ready to be completely immersed in that part of it. Mm-hmm. And that's why I decided not to do it.
I do think a lot of people would resonate that, oh, I'm tired of this industry that I'm in for 10 years. But for a lot of people, the worry that they would immediately think of is like, oh, I already invested 10 years of my life. Right. How did you have the courage to like peace out, like the second peace out after you came to Hong Kong at 16.
You know what? I think I'm just a creature motivated by having fun and pleasure. Mm-hmm. And when you were in the most pleasurable space and it's not giving you the high that it's supposed to give you, it's like, okay, I'm out. When you can find a problem in a place that really is what you wanted for the longest time, then you need to question yourself. And I needed to take a step back.
Have you had like self-doubt moment when you are not conforming to societal expectations? And how do you overcome that moment?
I mean, every day is always a question mark, right? It was so much easier when I was in a very clear path. But even then, that path was different from what, you know, other people wanted from me. I think as women, we're born with it. I don't know when the seed is planted in us that we need to gaslight ourselves and question ourselves so much. And we need to explain and explain and explain why we're doing something. That's something that I live with every day. And I think a lot of women do as well. All this recapping about the art world makes me miss it. And I'm just like, man, if I had stuck in it, that would be very interesting and very exciting. But at the same time, the moments of self-doubt need to be overshadowed by a clarity that you are thankful for where you are right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for me, that has always overshadowed any self-doubt, is that I am grateful for my life now, for the things that I get to do now, for the people that are around me. And that really is always something that I'm just like, it's okay. Oh, it's all good.
I think it happens to, especially myself, like when I jump careers, my family would say, oh, why are you so unstable? But deep down, I know I need to do this to keep myself happy. So I'm interested to know, like, if this ever happened to you?
100%. Like, my family still doesn't understand what I do, you know? And I just have to live with it. And that's one of the things that you have to break. It's like, they don't really care about what you do. They want to know that you're happy, that you're healthy, and that you're fulfilled. I think it's an antiquated thing, and it's probably just old thinking that those three things come with a good job. You have to show them that you're independent, and part of that is explaining less about what you're doing. It took me some time to seriously look at myself and what I wanted to be and how I wanted to operate in the world. And it really wasn't driven by my identity tethered to work or my career. If I don't have my job, how do I introduce myself? Just Zoe? That's completely fine. That's completely fine. We've forgotten in this world that it's completely fine to introduce ourselves with just our name.
Yes. I like that when Zoe touched on the word authenticity. A lot of people, I think, especially in Asian culture, there is almost like a pressure where you have to achieve so much in order to prove yourself because of your strong ego, because of the expectations of others. And you know what? Like, people don't even know how to be in touch with their authenticity.
Mm.
You know, they don't know what is being authentic feels like. They don't understand how to get there. Was it through like a lot of regular self-checking in that was just naturally, that's part of your personality, right, Zoe? As you said, you're very used to say, hey, how am I doing? How am I feeling? Is this right or wrong? But then how did you understand slowly, this is the authentic self? Is it because you feel free? Is it because, like, how did you feel to reassure yourself that I am being authentic?
I can only credit that to the people around me. You have to surround yourself with people that are supportive of you, that understand you. I also didn't do this decision on an island. I had people around me that I consulted, that I talked to. It wasn't all me. The people that said that I was crazy, the friends that said that, you know, maybe you shouldn't be doing this, understood anyway.
Zoe, I want to know a bit more about your charity. What motivated you to, you know, you can do a lot in your career and you want leisure time as well. But instead of, you know, taking time off, you get into charity. Like, have you observed something in Hong Kong that motivated you to do that, to be part of it?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think when I moved from art to fundraise for a charity, it was my first start into trying to do something for the community. But at the same time, the charity that I worked for then wasn't focused on what I was really passionate about, which was really empowering domestic helpers in Hong Kong. And I have a soft spot for them because a lot of them are Filipino, like me. You know, and that's something that I'm comfortable saying, because there is this weird world that exists in Hong Kong when it comes to domestic helpers, the nature of how they're treated in Hong Kong, what rights they're allowed and given, and how they're looked after, even by their home government. The best thing that you can have is a knowledge of how to manage your money. And it gives you freedom, how to maneuver around life. And domestic helpers don't have that. And let's be fair, not everyone has that knowledge in their fingertips. We should. We 100% should. A lot of the anxiety around money goes away when you know what's going on and what you're able to do. But you have to pay attention and you have to know the skills. It's not just something that you're like, okay, you know, I learned the hard way. And I learned because I ran my business.
It's very profound to listen to your entire journey because it's tied with your constant re-identification. Like, as you mentioned, like redefining yourself. Filipino is one of your identity. And then you're also an art girl. And then you want to get into like marketing to promote in such like more a strategized way. Does AWA like carry another identification of yours?
Yeah, I think so. But I'm super proud to be leading the AWA. I never thought this opportunity would pop up. I'm almost a year into the role. It's almost taken that much time to really understand what needs to happen and how I can really support the organization best. Not to redefine it, it's an expansion. You're right, I'm still the art girl. I still am 100%. Marketing is the job. And the charity work is passion. They all exist together. AWA is an expansion of how you can be of service to the people around you. We have been around for over 60 years, constantly fundraising for smaller charities in Hong Kong. But at the same time, you know, the stories that some of the members have told me about how they found their like lifelong best friend, I find that super moving. Being part of the board is an expansion of how I want to affect.
What would you say the main mission of AWA is? And I really want you to share like how you became like the president, like a story, because you told me once and I found it really, really funny, actually.
I have a friend, her name is Teresa, and she is a powerhouse woman. Like at the tail end of the pandemic earlier this year, she was just like, hey, this opportunity came up. You might want to throw your hat in the ring and see if you get elected. And there are other positions that you can look at. I learned more about the AWA and I really love their mission. Teresa was just like, by the way, I'm also going for the board. And then I said, we kind of looked at each other and said, this is going to be a real adventure if we do this together. I'm sorry, is this the story that I told you, Vivian?
Yeah, and then you were like, screw it, I'm going for the president role.
Oh, yes, yes.
There were so many positions that you can contribute, but then you're like, oh, it's vacant.
One of those things, yeah. I was just looking at it and I was like, I don't want to do another comms role, because that's my life already. And then I saw the president role and it really was vacant. And I was just like, oh, maybe just try. I looked at those positions. I'm like, what is going to teach me the most? 100%. It's teaching me a lot of things. Being president of an organization like the AWA is a privilege. AWA started as a way for expat women to kind of find their footing in Hong Kong when they arrived here. Throughout the years, I think it really has evolved into something that is a lot more universal. and a lot more open. You don't have to be American to join. In fact, it's one of the reasons why I say AWA and not American Women's Association. Over the years, we've changed to be a really fun and a really human organization that allows women to just show up as they are. You know, you don't have to be an entrepreneur. You don't have to be XYZ. You don't have to have this great career. I guarantee you, so many of our members have all of that, but they come to the AWA to just hang out and then give back to the community. For me, I do it because it's my way of to build a world that I want to be part of. If I want a world that's kinder and more open to everyone, my actions need to show that, right?
I think a lot of the time, like the reason why communities are connected or how we are now connected is because we all have the drive and the heart to give to the community, to do our little part.
It's a way of connecting with other people. People need people.
I see Zoe as like you have a really expansive way of life. A lot of people would be like, oh, this is my career. This is the lifestyle that I want to build for myself. But Zoe has a different lens towards who she is and how does she want to push what she believes in. And I think that is really rare for you to be able to stay sane, but yet like contribute in so many different roles. The last question that I have for you, since our channel is called Unlabeling Effect, what's the one label you think you want to unlabel the most?
You don't have to be one definition of success. Your value as a person isn't tied to your job title. And I know that sounds cliche because a lot of people are talking about that, but it really is, you know, and I've lived it. I've been asked about this before. It's like, okay, you get to plan A, because I was that person, plan A to plan B, whatever you're going to plan. Your plan is great, but it's only going to take you so far. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to be okay with not knowing and being lost. When you get to the point, oh gosh, where am I going to go next? Because those were always the questions that I had when I pivoted in my career. Mm. And it wasn't just to my next job. It was, oh gosh, where am I going to go next? Am I going to become a mother? Am I going to move back to Manila? That lostness and that uncertainty, we shouldn't be scared of that. When I got to that point, my first inkling was like, oh, I've really made all the wrong choices, because it hasn't led me to this enlightening moment of where I know everything. And what I realized is that you're never going to get there. And how lucky are you that you are able to do that? Don't be afraid of not knowing. Don't be afraid of feeling confused, because that is such a gift, such a privileged position to be in.
Love it.
That's a great label to unlabel.
Thank you. A long label.
That's all for today's episode. Feeling Lost is a Gift by Zoe Penna. Join us again next time when we talk about how discipline is related to happiness with Bastian Gerber.
Thank you for tuning in, and let's continue the conversation on Instagram at Unlabeling Effect. Please subscribe to our podcast on Spotify and iTunes and give us a rating. Until then, dare to feel, dare to be real.